Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we get into wokeness versus racist, and lots of interesting conversation coming up. My dad's non-travel plans in his life, and Chappelle, stand-up, so much. First, Bet Online. That's right, no shortage of action at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly coming back. UFC, NASCAR, boxing, soccer. BetOnline has the best odds, best lines out there for upcoming games or events. Need more? BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC daily. Also, live casino games, poker tournaments, best props in the business. And it's easy. Just visit betonline.ag. Use your mobile device if you want. Join with the promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner at Podcast One. And don't forget, use the promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, political analyst and the author of The Hard Hat Riot, David Paul Kuhn. With Gina Grad on news and Balt Bryan on sound effects, and now, he also got thrown in the back of an unmarked van, but that was by Ray and Chris when he was cleaning carpets. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to mandate you get it on, man. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing this podcast with a friend. We rely on you. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Balt Bryan.
Here we go.
Here we go, indeed. All right. So, thoughts. We have a funny recording that's a funny comedy bit that's been making the rounds. Max Pata just found it and showed it to me. And it's why comedy is so effective. It's one thing to politicize something right or left and just get up there and kind of preach about it. But when you really do a good job comedically with something, you can really send a message in a much more effective way. So we'll play you that. It's basically the woke and the racist agreeing on the same thing that I saw it 20 minutes ago. It made me laugh, but it's super effective. But
and that makes so much sense, because when you laugh, your defenses are inherently down. You're inherently more willing to listen when you're laughing.
You're acknowledging some truth.
Yes. Brian is right. If it's not true, then you don't laugh, then it's confusing, then it doesn't work. Your laughter or your understanding of it is a recognition of the truth. And when you're doing a Sunday morning political show and this guy's arguing that argument and that guy's arguing this argument, there is no recognition of the truth. There's just a defense of each point, right? But the laughter, the jokes don't have to be political. They don't have to be anything. It's just the laughter is sort of the knowing nod of the truth. If you go, oh man, every time you're on the freeway and I'm in a rush and I'm running late for the airport, I get behind some German guy driving a Porsche. Ugh. Then everyone just sits there and stares at you. There's no truth there. There's no laughter. Yes, Brian.
The first few weeks, remember I started the comedy class a year ago for Last of Bald Brian, the same one that Gina took. Gina, you remember that every joke starts with a premise. The first few weeks were all just based on premises, just observations of truth. Like, you know, if you come up with a premise, everyone goes, oh yeah, you're right. Like, isn't it funny how? Isn't it weird how? Everyone's on board. They're like, oh yeah, that is weird. Oh yeah, that is funny. Then you construct a joke out of it. Then you can you make an act out or a punchline or whatever. But it starts with the premise, like you were saying.
Yeah, and some premises, you know, you have to kind of go along with on the ride. But as we start to look at woke versus racist, there's a lot of commingling going on these days. I mean, obviously, many of the voices and many of the thoughts coming from the woke community sound like racist thoughts of yore or present racist thoughts. But it's the kind of stuff, you know, just that sort of, you know, just back like in colleges, like we want black dorms. We want our own dorms. Like, OK, that's segregated. That's your own dorms. But it's still
to move away from
doesn't sound that much different than your own lunch counters or drinking fountains. You know, this sort of it's a lot of the same premises. And well, I'll play you that bit. I do want to tell you that I had a scary thought. Stifle yourself for a second, Max Zapata. I said something. I was talking, I was doing radio this morning, and I was talking to a host, Woody is his name, and he said, first thing he said to me, he was like, oh, man. He said, you're so lucky. You know, you've gone out there, you've created your own podcast, you do your own books, you do stand-up. You're so lucky. You get to say what you think, man. And I'm like, you're a radio show host, or you're a commentator, or you're a whomever, and you don't get to say what you think. Think about how sad that is in 2020. It's a guy who speaks into a microphone for a living, doing jokes and making some commentary, saying to me, you're lucky. You get to say what's on your mind.
What other forum is there better for expressing your opinions?
Right. It's a sad testimonial to what the state we're in, which is, oh, he's got a microphone and he's also got a brain, but he can't let it flow. He's got to pass it through a governor because the wrong person could hear him and get his sponsors to drop him and get him shit canned. But it's just sad that broadcasters are saying, you're lucky. You get to say what you want.
Did you bring that up to him?
I did. I just went, God, that I never even, I've never really heard it clearly. I've always just kind of went like, I got a podcast. Yeah, I say what I want. But I never really thought about what that really means, that everyone throughout America who's commentating or morning radio or drive time or whatever, it's like everyone is being very careful about what they're saying. And again, you give people a microphone and then you don't want any art working that way. You just don't. You don't want painting working that way. You don't want music working that way. You want the person to express their music, express their opinion, express their art, express their poetry. And then you, if you don't like it just think about how offensive some music is to some people. You know what I mean? Like, DJ Khaled is offensive to me. Like, this guy's just offensive. And also, all the weird sort of ghoul rock where they're like, you know, that weird ghouly, devilly, weirdo rock. It's not even
that drop.
It's not really music. It's pure id. It's pure energy. It's pure aggression. It's like it's for 14-year-old boys who were molested. You know, yeah. But it's like I find it grating and offensive. But I would never dream of wanting it. You know, I'm gonna stifle those people. Let's just go let them play some concert, and I'm not going. But anyway,
well, that's a very recent. I mean, I don't know if you and Ricky Gervais have morning coffee phone conversations, but. Damn, whenever you say something, I see a Ricky Gervais tweet the day after, when you were talking about I'm rubber, you're glue, and it's a free country. The next morning, I sent it to Chris and Haley. He had a very similar tweet, but the basis of it is, if you don't support people's right to free speech who you don't agree with, you don't support free speech.
I'm a fan of Ricky, and I think it's got guys like that have to sort of claim this mantle back for our society. And this bit is it's the woke and the racist. Now, it's a little visual, but it's the one guy's wearing the woke T-shirt, the other guy's wearing the racist T-shirt, and as it turns out, they have much more in common. It's by comedian Ryan Long, and we'll just play it for you.
When me and Brad first met, I didn't think we'd get along, but turns out we kind of agree on everything.
Your racial identity is the most important thing. Everything should be looked at through the lens of race.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
Damn.
We both have a lot of opinions about people of color, even though we barely know any.
I say colored people, but as long as we're classifying them, we both think minorities are a united group who think the same and act the same.
And vote the same. You don't want to lose your black card.
Sorry, I don't know. I just think we should roll back discrimination laws so we can hire based on race again.
Jinx, now you owe me a Coke. Hey, tell them what you told me yesterday.
White actors should only do voices for white cartoon characters.
I've been saying that for years. Stick to your own.
Us white people, we have so much privilege.
I agree. It is a privilege to be white. Ask him about interracial dating.
All I said is that black men who date white women have internalized racism, and white men that date ethnic women are fetishizing them.
Guy's against interracial dating now. Like, am I being pranked? Did Boomer put you up to this?
Ugh, you know that taco place is white-owned?
White people should be making white foods, like Kraft macaroni and cheese. No seasoning, not even salt. It's like he's a mind reader. I mean, I've been pushing for segregation forever, and my man does what?
I created an improv comedy show exclusively for ethnic people.
Guy segregates comedy on my birthday.
White people need to stop wearing dreadlocks, and they need to stop appropriating black people's music.
Shaved heads and country music, the way God intended.
You know all white people are racist.
I'm listening.
Even if you have a black wife or a black friend group, you're still really racist.
You know, we just kicked a guy out of the organization for having a black girlfriend, but if you can promise me he's still really racist, we'll consider letting him back in.
Black people should only shop at black businesses.
I guess the only thing we really disagree about is I think white people are the root of all evil.
But what did I tell you, though? If we can narrow that down to a certain group of tiny-hatted white people, I think we can come to an understanding.
Technically, I don't consider Jewish people white.
Neither
because...
do I.
That's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, and obviously using comedy to push the point is super effective. It's just effective. And it always has been, and that's one of the reasons it'd be nice to welcome that kind of comedy back into our lives, because it's a great way of making your point. A joke is a great... That's why when you look at a really good, like, Doonesbury cartoon or something like that, and whoever your artist is, but when you
timely
see, like,
reference,
sorry, when you see three panels, when you see three,
that's why the Far Side worked. Everything was like, oh yeah, I get that book instantly,
right? Yep. You just it just works, and that's the magic of it. All right, and fresh off the heels of that is a New York Times article that I stumbled across the other day that is exactly what we're talking about, which is the tryouts for the philharmonics and the orchestras and everything. They would do them for a number of years now. It must be, I don't know, Max Bat, you can find out, but it's been... a good, I don't know, 40 years, they've been doing the tryouts blindly. They do it behind a screen. You know what I mean?
Sure. Seems fair.
Yeah. Because they were sort of thinking, like, there's too many guys. And there's, like, it started off as there's too many guys in the orchestra and there's not enough women. And so if we put them behind a screen and we just do it based on your ability to play the cello or the merits of the way. And obviously, whoever's listening has a trained ear and can pick out the best on the oboe, you know. So we put you behind the screen. For me, I put a little hole in the screen, you know, a little glory hole to see who really wants into the band.
Right.
You know what I mean?
How bad do you want it?
You really want to be? You want to make first chair? Oh, I can get you there. But that's me. That's what I do with the screen. Okay. It's a different technique. I'm not trying to be offensive. But they put the screen, and so this was going to work. This is good. What else could you want other than blindly listening to the ability and the meritocracy and the whatever? And I think they thought it started in the 70s. It's been around for a while. I think they thought it was going to get more women into the orchestra, and I don't know that it did. But,
it did.
Yeah. Okay.
I could see there being like unconscious biases, especially in the 70s, against female, you know, yes, classical musicians, colored people of color, musicians. Like, maybe it's an unconscious bias.
Yeah,
seeing them. Yeah, makes sense.
I agree. I think when you think about a guy playing rock guitar. You picture a guy playing rock guitar. And when you hear a woman playing a rock guitar, you hear about it. You go, oh, well, let me see about that. You know, there's that's how we work. But yes, sorry.
Yeah. So in 1970, before the blind auditions, women in orchestras hovered under 6%. And this is from the same article that Doss is going to read from. Today, women make up a third of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and they are half the New York Philharmonic.
Wow. Well, that's still 50 years, though. I mean, I'd want to know. I don't think it changed much in the first, like, 5 years or something. But women in general are playing instruments. They're good at it. This is 50 years later. So for sure today. But I'm curious if you can figure out if the blind thing changed it. You know, mm-hmm. You'd think it would change it almost immediately. But either way, they went blind because they didn't want to know the gender, especially, and or the nationality. And so what could be a better example of this country? This is why we love sports so much. But anyway, there's an op-ed in the New York Times. Here it is.
Blind auditions are based on an appealing premise of pure meritocracy. An orchestra should be built from the very best players, period. But ask anyone in the field, and you'll learn that over the past century of increasingly professionalized training, there has come to be remarkably little difference between players at the top tier. There is an athletic component to playing an instrument, as is with sprinters, gymnasts.
Wait, hold on a second. Yeah, but isn't it that way with every guy who was a good baseball player in college and just couldn't quite make the pros, just a couple percentage points?
I was going to say, like, the guys who are in the NBA and the guys who are in, like, the D-League, it's not that much of a difference. Those are great athletes. They just aren't quite to that level, you know what I mean?
Right. But I'll let the coach and the general manager who want to win figure out who's just a shade better than the other. But sorry, go ahead, Dawson.
As with sprinters, gymnasts, and tennis pros, the basic level of technical skill among American instrumentalists has steadily risen. A typical orchestral audition might end up attracting dozens of people who are essentially indistinguishable in their musicianship and technique. It's like an elite college facing a sea of applicants with straight A's and perfect test scores. Such a school can move past those marks, embrace diversity as a social virtue, and assemble a freshman class that advances other values along with academic achievement. For orchestras, the quality of an ideal player might well include talent as an educator, interest in unusual repertoire, or willingness to program innovative chamber events, as well as pure musicianship. American orchestras should be able to foster these values and a diverse complement of musicians rather than passively waiting for representation to emerge from behind the audition screen. So I left out the title at the top because I thought it would explain it. I apologize. To make orchestras more diverse, end blind auditions.
Yeah, here's the problem. And it's the problem that no one ever understands. If, in fact, you do that, then the young woman or male of color, black or Hispanic or whatever, who's playing the violin, we then think that person is there for reasons other than their ability. That's the part that's the slippery slope, which you don't want to go down. I don't care. I will watch NFL games on occasion, and I will literally see every player on the defensive side of the ball is black. And all I do is think those are the best defensive players on that team who are on the side of that ball. I don't know why. I could understand. You know, when you're making the argument for the police force and that the police force needs to represent ethnically the community, I go, okay, I don't like that, but I get there's an argument to be made. But in the arts and or in music or and or sports, I don't know that the players on the defensive side of the ball on the Seattle Seahawks need to represent the community that they serve or that they live in. I think we just want the best players either playing the cello or the best players playing football out on the field. And I think we understand the concept that if you're good, and would you want it any other way if you were trying to make a band or a team?
Well, just to put it even more pop cultural significant way, think about TV shows like The Voice. And the reason why people were so attracted to that idea was because everyone who's judging you and picking whether they want you to stick around or not is faced the other way while you're singing. So that, I think that's the appeal. And you turn around and you're surprised or you're not, but it's not based on anything else. And then you have, you know, old school shows like American Idol. And how many times on that show do you say, you know what, you have a beautiful voice, but you just don't look like a pop star. I don't know what to tell you. So it is a proven concept. We do like watching that. We are attracted to it for a reason.
Yes, it's the meritocracy. And then obviously the ultimate evolution of a society is not a black orchestra or white orchestra or an Asian orchestra or a Jewish orchestra or the numbers of each group within that orchestra manipulated. The evolution and sort of the final destination of a society is, here's what the orchestra is made of. It's made of the best players. It turns out there's more Asian women who are represented in that orchestra. But then when you move, you know, you think, well, what are some of our society's great pastimes? Well, we like sports and we like music. All right. So Asian women may be overrepresented in a classical setting. But then you go to the arena of sports and you go to the WNBA and there doesn't appear to be any Asian women in that group. So it's like, okay, well then maybe this group excels at that and that group excels at that. And good. There's the good news is we can go support both of them.
Question.
Yes.
Is it possible, and I'm not putting a value judgment on it, I'm just trying to pull the camera back as far as possible. You know, we always talk about the pendulum swing between hair bands and grunge and everything in between. Is it possible that societally, we are still in the middle of a pendulum swing, and until we swing out the other way, we're not going to get back to the middle? So in other words, you know, with more white people having, you know, access to whatever and not experiencing slavery in this country and being not being able to give them the right to vote, all that stuff, are we in the process of the pendulum swinging to more power for people of color before that society will allow it to sit back in the middle and calibrate itself again?
It's a well thought out point. I was kind of tuned out, but it sounded
Thank
good.
You.
No.
Tonally
was on point. I'll read the transcript on my way home. No, it was good. I'll tell you what I was thinking about. I was thinking about this pendulum and how that worked, the pendulum. And I was thinking about how it worked, and I started to really realize as I was thinking about it, when I was talking to Dr. Drew the other day, because he keeps saying, when's it going to swing back? When is it going to swing back? And I now realize it's not a pendulum. It's a clickety-clack ball. There's two of them. They're swinging. They're just swinging the opposite direction.
A Newton's cradle.
Yeah, they're going. There's two of them. It's not one's going up right. And now it's coming back. It's going further up, and the other side is going further up the other direction. So it's kind of into my safe spaces and octagon thing. It's not like, oh, we're going to start swinging back and the safe spacers are heading to the octagon, or it's not like right. The octagon guys are heading back to the safe. They're getting deeper. They're both going. They're going to put a tough mudder inside an octagon. They're going to like fill it with mud and the guys are going to fight in a mud pit. And the safe spacer guys are working on allergies to food that hasn't been invented yet. So they're like literally just, I think it's a pendulum there's two of them now. They're just going further apart. And I guess if you want to hang out in the middle, you'll probably get crushed as they come back, rebound, smash you in the middle, and then bounce off of your broken rib cage out to their apexes. Well, there's a picture.
I was going to say.
All right. We have a unprepared. I'm going to be in Addison. We're doing Dallas Texas, and it'll be Friday, Saturday. We're doing live podcast and stand-up there, so tickets available if you want to come out and enjoy yourself at the Addison Improv in Dallas this Friday and Saturday. We have a unprepared, what is the...
This is from Houston.
This is from Houston.
And this the word was internet dating.
Internet words. Dating.
All right, hands up. Oh, there we go. Wait, we got a new one right here. Yeah.
Internet dating.
Internet dating. I don't know how internet dating works because I'm old. Every once in a while, though, you have to kind of think about your spouse. Like, you two.
That's an interesting thing for her to bring up.
Husband and wife, yeah. But where'd you two meet?
We met playing poker.
Right. And what town did you meet in?
Here.
And what are the chances your soulmate is two streets over from you? You know what I mean? I'm not saying it's not a legitimate relationship and there's not great love between the two of you, but that old thing where it's like, how'd you meet your wife? Becky Sue, she sat behind me in math class. What are the chances? All the people in the world, she was the one sitting behind you in math class. I'm just saying. He's 11 years older than you, and he hung out on your street as a teenager. You're making a hell of a point. You know, now that you're 35 and he's 46, it's awesome. But when you were 11 and he was 22, that was a little... That's a different 11 years. Bradley... Keep that one on the down low. He had a custom van. He used to sell ice cream out of. Now, sometimes we didn't have money, but it was okay. He had a different form of payment. He wanted to know what color our panties were. And he would give us a bomb pop. Later on, after he was paroled, he would come back. And we're playing pinochle, and that's where we fell in love. Here's my thing about your, like, profile, right? Because everyone's profile is pretty goddamn rosy on there. Their pictures are cooked. The profile's pretty rosy. I don't know what to believe. Here's the deal. I say... If you want to go online and you want to date and you want to have a profile, your ex has to create the profile for you. So yours would be loves the outdoors, loves dogs, never stops working. But if your ex did it, it would be always late. Smokes when she's drunk, binge watches locked up abroad and doesn't take care of the kids. But a little more, there'd be a little more truth in that.
Well, there you go. That is unprepared from, that was Houston? Yeah. Yep. Back in the day. I can't even remember what, I can't keep track of this year. This pandemic lockdown thing has got my year calendar all kind of whacked out. Weekends are strange. Dates are weird. Yeah.
Just to help you, February was 4.5 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Kobe Bryant died this year.
Oh, my God. My kids just said they're not going back to school until the after the first of the year. I think after January. It's all nutty cuckoo. All right, let me hit Madison Reed. Mister, working from home, starting to look around, see the co-workers on the video calls, looking at the coloring, a little too much gray around the temples or in the beard. Madison Reed, Mister, gray blending, natural color for your hair and beard. I saw the before and after shots, very natural looking. And they didn't have that shoe polished look if you... Look at an old John Travolta picture. You'll see what I'm talking about. Maybe you want a little more pepper and a little less salt. How about that? Madison Reed Mister. Makes it easy to find the color to match. You just go on the website and you can see the colors and match it up to your own hair color. Quick and easy. Just apply the color, and you can do it, the color gel, do it dry, then add the activator. Wait 10 minutes and rinse and shampoo, and you're out the door. Right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMR.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. And use code Adam for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam.
All right, we got some calls waiting up there. There's a brain tumor call for Bald Brian and poor young Dan over here. And there's a Dave Chappelle pop-up comedy show as well out there. So we'll take a break. We'll come right back. We'll take your calls right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for a brand new month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This shipment includes a bug bite thing to suck out any mosquito bites you get while drinking Mangria in the summer sun. A You Can Frisbee Here frisbee, perfect for tossing at the beaches Newsom won't let you go to. An ACS koozie to keep your beer cold. And most importantly, let people know that this beer is yours. A ready patch for those who get a little rosy from drinking too many cold beers. And, of course, a bottle of your choice. This $60 value is yours for only $25. Order one or keep the shipments coming at CorollaDrinks.com.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Akron, Ohio. A 44-year-old man was charged with disorderly conduct, criminal damaging, and open container after he forced his way behind the counter of a Subway restaurant and ended up making his own sandwich. Officers found that his pockets contained a bottle of vodka and a block of cheese! Definitely not a Jew!
All right, we got a call about Chappelle doing pop-up shows, and we got a brain tumor call as well. We'll just go down the line. Phil, 32, Dayton, Ohio.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, so I don't know if you've heard anything about Dave Chappelle doing these pop-up comedy shows in Yellow Springs, Ohio, his hometown, throughout the summer.
I've heard little bits and pieces. Did you say you went to one?
Yeah, so tickets went on sale for this past week's shows on Monday, and he put up three shows, I believe, this past week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I went to the Saturday show, and basically, he's emceeing, and he has Michelle Wolf, Mo Amer, and Donnell Rawlings, who are reoccurring comedians on the show. And then he kind of, I think he brings in somebody special for every show. Our show had Chris Rock.
Where? Wow. Where does he do them?
It's literally in the middle of a field.
Oh, well, so he shot his last special that way, right?
Is it the same place?
That's where it is.
And is it, but it's not on his property.
No, it's called Warwick Plaza or Warwick Pavilion. But if you look at it on a map, it looks like it's this tiny little gazebo in the middle of a field.
And how many tickets could you sell to something like that?
I think it was between 150 and 200 tickets.
Wow. And what do the tickets cost?
$100 a pop.
And obviously, Chris Rock's not doing it for the money, and neither is Chappelle. No. They're just doing it to sort of keep the ring rust off or to keep connected, or maybe it's just they're doing it for the fans. How was the experience?
It was pretty surreal. So I know you guys are probably familiar with Chappelle's kind of MO now with his comedy. Like, you go in and you have to hand over your phone and your smartwatch. It goes into one of those magnetic pouches that you keep the entire time. Mm-hmm. But the show was slated to start at 9. People are showing up 2 hours early to get good seats. It's all general admission seating. And you basically have a 6-foot circle that has 2 folding chairs. Sit down in those and you just wait. we waited. We got in the door at 8 and waited 2 hours. They didn't start until 10. Mm-hmm. And the show went until about 1 in the morning.
Wow. Damn. And was it... Did it meander at some point? I mean, did it feel tight? Did it feel like you know, sometimes comedians just get up there and just kind of want to talk versus work material out or hone it?
As far as the regulars like Michelle Wolf, Mo Amer, and Donnell Rawlings, they all were pretty tight with their material. Chappelle, I mean, he's insane. Like, it seems like he could go up there and vamp for hours. He had a little bit of material, but everything else seemed like it was off the cuff. And he probably was up there for a total of an hour and a half.
How many cigarettes did he smoke?
he had one lit. I think he did 2 per set.
I always think it's a very interesting message to send, because you walk out there and by the way, when you smoke a cigarette and you're doing stand up, you don't really get to really smoke your cigarette that well because you're talking the whole time. I think it's like it's a symbolic, hey, guess who's doing what he wants to do when he wants to do it? Like, hey, there's a bunch of rules out there. I don't know. I'm going to smoke my cigarette.
If he can do it on stage at SNL, he can do it anywhere.
Yeah, if they stop me, there's a lot of people upset.
Right. And so I think he walks out and does it to sort of go, here's the message I'm sending. I'm doing what I do. I know you guys got rules for everyone about everything. Not me. This is what I do. Because if you think about it, he goes out there, does an SNL monologue. It's 4.5 minutes long. You technically don't need to smoke during that monologue. You could smoke. You could put the cigarette out while you're walking out onto stage and then light one up as soon as you hit your green room. But interesting. So overall, Phil, was it a good experience or was it too long? Or how did could you buy beer and drinks and how did it all work?
So they only had one like beverage food station set up, which is all you need with that amount of people, but no alcohol. But people were, I mean, it was like almost like a football game because people were in the parking lot tailgating, their drinks flowing. It was a super loose atmosphere. As far as like ramping up to the show, I was getting a little worried because Chappelle is a little flighty sometimes. He's known to cancel his shows locally. So once we got past an hour of waiting time, I was like, fuck, this is not going to go well. But once it started, it felt like an hour and a half, but it was almost a 4-hour show.
Wow. And
I'm just wondering from the Netflix special and the one he put on YouTube that we all saw, he had a lot of feelings. He said, I don't know what I'm going to say yet. And then he, you know, it was a lot of soliloquy still done in a way that, you know, makes you chuckle and makes you nod your head, but not obviously not a stand up act. Is he still sort of doing the I just got to talk thing, or is there like a setup punchline element, or at least a, you know, a humorous story element, or is he still in soliloquy mode, which is great. It's just a different thing.
He's definitely in comedy mode now. I mean, I think that he put out that special on YouTube, and that kind of got his thoughts out. But it was definitely a stand-up night, which was amazing. They ended the night. It was just Chris Rock and him on stage and Chappelle on stage for almost an hour.
Wow.
Just working off of enough one another. It was like bucket list kind of stuff. It was pretty awesome.
My son has been sitting down in the movie theater and he's been watching He's been watching Chappelle's stand-up specials. He was watching Chris Rock's stand-up specials. He had a couple of nights of watching Chappelle's specials and a couple nights of watching Chris Rock's specials. And maybe the second or third night, I walked in, and he's like, I'm like, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to watch Chris Rock's fourth special or whatever. And I said, you know, your dad has a stand-up special, pretty highly rated on IMDb. Why don't we give that a look-see? And he's like, I don't know. I've
seen it so many times.
I'm cool with Chris Rock. And I was like, you never seen my stand-up special. And he's like, but I get the gist. And I said, you know, I you're old enough now, and it's got some inspiration. I think you would like it, and it's good, and I think we should check it out. Let's check it out. And he's like, ugh, well, where do you find it? You know, and I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know where to find it. And he's like, all right, well, let's look around. I said, I think it might be on Apple, or might be on Amazon. Maybe it's on Amazon or something like that. So we hopped over to Amazon, and it's like, there it was. I think it was Amazon, right, Max? And it's like, you want to buy it, you want to rent it, and whatever. And I was like, yeah, let's, I don't know, just rent it. It's $4.99. Let's check it out. And so, like, he hits rent, and it, like, kicks us back to the home page. And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, hits rent again, doesn't rent. I said, all right, try buying it. So he didn't buy it. So what? I'll pay $12. It's mine. So it tries to buy it. It doesn't go through. Like, it doesn't work. It kicks us back. I go, let me try that. I get the remote. I'm like, hitting buy and rent. It's like, it's not working. It's not working. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? I got to watch Chris Rock now. So he goes back and he watches Chris Rock, right? And the next day, young Peter comes over to the house, and he's pretty tech savvy guy. And I have my notebook of, my list of shit. Hey, I got to fix this. I got to fix that. I want this. And so me and Sonny and Peter are like standing in the kitchen, and I go, Peter, the Amazon down in the theater, when you hit rent or you hit buy, it there's some problem with it. It's not working. And if you could go down there and troubleshoot it or figure it out, that would be awesome, because me and Sonny tried and we just couldn't pull it off. And Sonny sort of looked at him and went, it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, he was hitting the back button.
I was like, what do you mean it's fine? It's not broken. It's not broken.
He was stepping on a scale.
I was like, but I tried to hit by. Yeah, it's, you got to do it a different way, but it's good.
He was hitting the escape button.
What the fuck?
Wow.
Can you imagine you tried that shit? Like, if you were a kid, your dad would be beating you with a snow shovel in the kitchen.
He'd be beating you with that remote.
And the remote over the head. But he just sort of looked at, he waved off Pete. He was like, no, nothing's broken. Nothing's broken. Good. Fucking sad state of affairs, right?
That's great.
I still don't know, Max Bata, what it was, but now I'm curious. I don't know what the hell Sonny was doing.
Than hit the okay button to rent, he was probably hitting the home button or the back button.
Yeah, he was hitting the back button. It kept going back.
Then what if I'd gotten it to work? Would he have to, like, stand up, pretend to trip, and throw his drink at the screen? You know, like, oh, look at
that. That's a gambit that Sonny was willing to take, because you getting it to work is as long a shot.
I know. I couldn't buy it either, but I still don't know. All right. Hey, thanks, Phil from Dayton, Ohio.
No problem, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, I like the innovation, and also I like... I mean, Chris Rock, I mean, he must have flown in privately.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know, Rock is in New York or L.A., but I mean, you want to get to Dayton, Ohio or somewhere on a private jet, it's round trip, it's $35,000 minimum. So I don't know if there's a lot of profit. Obviously,
the hell
of
a friendship.
Doing it for the art.
Yeah. I think Chris Rock is good for it.
Dan, 29, Phoenix.
Yeah, hey guys, big fan.
What's going on?
Hey, I had a question for Bald Brian.
What's up, Dan?
I had a tumor. Hey, Bob. I had a brain tumor when I was a kid as well. Fortunately, it's past tense now. I've been good about 15 years. But
that's great.
I read your book a couple of years ago, and you know the chapter that really kind of stuck with me was you talking about all the the various songs that kind of you keep on hand for lifting your spirits and whatnot.
It was my feel good playlist, and I made that playlist when I was first diagnosed, and we were driving to and from Cedars every day to get radiation. We'd listen to that in the car. It would buoy our spirits.
Yep. Yeah. I kind of had the same thing. Do you guys remember the song "The Remedy" by Jason Mraz, early 2000s?
Mm. It's funny. Christy used to follow me out on concerts, so she would know it for sure.
Yeah. Sounds familiar.
You'd probably recognize it. The main chorus goes, "I won't worry my life away."
Mm-hmm.
So familiar. That's just, I was 12 years old. I would kind of play that song in my head during the dozens of MRIs I had.
The theme from Dawson's Creek is pretty effective, too.
I don't want to wait.
Just off the top of my head.
This is the Jason Mraz tune. You'll recognize it.
This is Mr. A to Z.
I'll just get to the big part if you want.
All right.
Well, if you got the poison, I've got the remedy is it?
Oh, yeah.
This is a dangerous liaison. Assist the comedy. Is that a serious? This is a strange enough new play on words. Is it the tragedy? Is how you're gonna spend the rest of your nights with the light on? So shine the light on all of your friends. Well, it all amounts to nothing in the end.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a good call, Dan.
Good call. So, Dan, how's it going now? So, tell us about it.
It's almost like that's a whole nother life ago. I was 12 years old when I first, found out about the tumor. I had 3 surgeries by the time I was 14, and then nothing since then. So, it's been about 15 years now, just, no treatments, no symptoms or anything since.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
That's living life right there.
Yeah.
That's the ball.
Now, the guy who performed surgery, was it a male? Was he white? Was he of Indian extraction? Who was that person?
I hope you're sitting down for this. He was a Japanese male.
Mm.
Oh.
See, I find that problematic. I feel like we need more women of color in that world. I feel like they're underrepresented.
For sure.
Yeah. So I'm sure when it's time for brain surgery, you'd like, let's get rid of the curtain here and just start bringing in more people of color into this world. Or would you just like the best brain surgeon you could have? I'm going with the best. Hey, and so Dan, you're free. And, how often do you get tested or the MRI'd or any of that? Or do you?
I actually don't anymore. I haven't had one in probably about, it's been quite a few years now. They've pretty much said after 10 years that you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Good that you're out of the woods. I appreciate that. And God, it's at 12, for Christ's sake.
That's
all right.
Crazy.
Good. Travel and hug everyone you see.
Yeah, Ball, can I ask, do you still listen to that playlist quite a bit, or have you added to it at all?
That's a very funny coincidence, Dan, because as you know, I'm going through a new round of treatment, and the side effects are pretty rough, I'll be honest with you guys. I think I put it on well for the show, but I'm definitely suffering over here. It's pretty rough. However, in my 7-day off break, it's 21 days on, 7 days off, I was feeling great. I mean, relatively great. This is a couple of weeks ago. I had 7 days off. I had like energy, and I had, I awoke with pep in my step. And for the first time in many years, Dan, I've thought about the song, which was the first song I put on the playlist, which is It's a Great Day to Be Alive by Travis Tritt, country singer. And I woke up with the thought in my head, like, wow, this is a great day. I need to, like, really, you know, value this because I'm going to be back on this medication in a week and it's going to suck. But I'm really seeing, like, the eye of the hurricane. You know what I mean? The light's shining on me and I'm gonna enjoy this. And I did. So, yeah, Dan, I thought about the playlist and that specific song for the first time in God knows how, you know, 7, 8, 10 years.
I got love it.
Thanks, Dan.
What
got
a great song.
A 3-day beard I don't plan to shave, and it's a goofy thing, but I just gotta say, hey, I'm doing all right. Yeah, I think I'll make me some homemade soup. Feeling pretty good, and that's the truth. It's neither drink nor drug induced, no, I'm just doing all right. And it's a great day to be alive. I know the sun's still shining when I close my eyes. There's some hard times in the neighborhood, but why can't every day be just this good?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, you should post. Let's put your list up on the website for when to refresh people's
memories. Oh, yeah.
Memories.
Good idea.
I conversely, when I was talking to my dad couple days ago.
he was humming the song?
No, I just looked at him. He's you know, he's going to turn 89. He's not driving. He's not really leaving the house. He's on the last. He's coming to the end. And I said to him, Dad, we're talking about his cousin Vince, who ended up doing some traveling after somebody died and left him some money. The way my family's loosely constructed, everyone waits around till somebody dies so they can start living. So basically,
foolproof strategy.
If you want to travel,
not harder.
Yeah, if you want to own a car, travel, or own a home, that's all fine. But you have to wait for someone to
wait
die.
Wait it out.
You have to wait it out.
Game.
Yeah, and then they die, and then you get to go to Europe.
That's
so
a windfall.
That's how it works. The problem is you're 74 at that time. Yeah. But either way, I said to him, we're talking about Uncle Vince traveling. And I said, Dad, you ever been to Europe? And he went, nope. And I went, you ever been to Mexico? And he went, nope. And I said, you ever been to Hawaii? He said, nope. I said, have you ever been to any form of island? He said, nope. I said, you been to Canada? And he said, nope. And then he paused. He went, once, I think, you know, like Niagara Falls, you know, honeymoon or some version of that, you know, 60 years ago. And I was like, all right. Well, I don't think any of this is happening. Now, I could have kept going. Have you ever had surf and turf? Have you ever put on cleats? Have you ever owned a bowling
ball? Charlene, he's not.
Yes.
Charlene would not be impressed.
No, she's... Well, he has been to him.
Oh, sure.
He's been to him on a futon for his entire life.
Kind of resides there.
I thought, Jesus Christ. Imagine a life in a modern era. You've never been to Hawaii. You've never been to Europe. You've never been to Mexico. I was in Mexico when I was 16 and a half. I drove there and slept on the beach. But Jesus, yeah. Goddamn Christ. What a crazy, insane, non-life. Low impact.
Well, hey, that's his non-journey. That's his lack of journey.
That's right. All right. Let me hit Butcher Box here. Hard to find. 100% grass-fed and finished beef. Well, not now that there's Butcher Box. Free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork. That's the stuff that's marbled nicely. Tastes like the old stuff. Wild-caught salmon. And you don't get to find all that stuff at the grocery store, but you can find it at Butcher Box. Butcher Box, one less trip to the store. Everything's easier these days. It's more affordable. The selection is unbelievable. Olga makes something from their catalog almost
every great.
Night. I love Butcher Box. I love the meat. I love the. I think we had steaks the other night. She did the. Oh God, what is it when you dice up the tomatoes and you put the cilantro and the garlic and everything in there?
Like a rotel?
It's kind of, it's not pico di gatto. It's like we, it's more the Italian version of it, but it's
bruschetta.
Yeah, bruschetta or whatever it is. Yeah, but I did that with the steak, with the butcher box steak, and it was so good. Anyway, each box.
You know what? Else they do beautifully? Pork sausage.
Oh,
they
really?
Do beautiful pork sausage. Well,
I gotta get some of that. I've been on the steak and the chicken. Each box has between 9 and 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 individual meals, around $6 a meal. Pack fresh, ship frozen, vacuum sealed, free shipping nationwide, except for Alaska and Hawaii. And take visiting the meat counter off your list. Have it brought to your house with ButcherBox. Get the quality meat to your right to your door. ButcherBox.com/Adam, and you get all the good discounts. ButcherBox.com/Adam. All right. Our guest is David Paul Kuhn. David Paul Kuhn has a book out. He's a senior political writer for Politico. He's worked as a writer for CBS. He's got many thoughts on the election that's coming up. He's been there. He's done that. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with him right after this.